Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, a weekly magazine format public affairs program on exopolitics, the new political science of outer space, the science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. Exopolitics Radio can be heard on 1480 AM KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix and worldwide on the internet at www.exopoliticsradio.com. Our audio archives, which are open 24/7 and are accessed by people worldwide on our planet Earth, are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. I'm your elusive but ever-present host, Alfred Weber, and today we have a special program with our Exopolitics Radio commentator in Washington, D.C., and our registered lobbyist, extraterrestrial community lobbyist in Washington, Steve Bassett, who's going to give us an update on the post-Super Tuesday and pre-Potomac primary exopolitical situation on the ET UFO profile of the political campaign in the U.S. presidential primaries. But before that, we'd like to have an Exopolitics Radio official commentary on, what shall we call them, extraterrestrials. I mean, here we are talking about exopolitics, which is the new political science of outer space, and everyone's talking about, oh, that's an extraterrestrial craft, and gee, is that an ARV, alien reproduction craft? Just what are these extraterrestrials? And where do they come from? Well, let's take one particular star, Betelgeuse. This is from an extraterrestrial hyperbase, which has been put together by a colleague of ours at the Exopolitics Institute. And we'll have it, if you go to www.exopolitics.com, we'll have it linked there. But Betelgeuse is a very interesting star. It's in the constellation Orion, which may have had a large effect on the politics of Earth in the not-too-distant past. I'll read just a bit from it so you can get a flavor of how extraterrestrial civilizations from Betelgeuse, that's Betelgeuse, may have affected us. Betelgeuse is the brightest star in the constellation of Orion. It is a so-called red giant and lies at a distance of approximately 657 light-years from the Earth. It is one of the largest known stars and has a size as big as the orbit of Jupiter. Let me repeat that. It is one of the largest known stars, and this star has a size as big as the orbit of Jupiter. In the constellation of Orion, Betelgeuse can be located as the left shoulder of the Hunter in the northern hemisphere, and Betelgeuse is said to be, or at least to have been, the home of the Council of Light, or Orion Council, and the forces of light during the Orion Wars. Gee, more to come. That's why we want a decade of context, so we can find out more about these exciting things that have been happening out there in the cosmos. According to some sources, it still is the home of the Council of Light. Other sources, however, including Bill Cooper, mentioned Betelgeuse as the home of the large-nosed, tall grays called the Eben. The negative Zetas are said to have bases or colonies in the Betelgeuse system too. So let's click on Orion here and see what Orion says. This is a very interesting hyperbase. Orion, or the Hunter, is the name of a star constellation easily located in the sky by three bright stars in a row that make up the Hunter's belt. Starting with the top one in the northern hemisphere, the name of the three stars are Mintaka, Al-Nilam, and Al-Nitak. According to Solara, their galactic names are El, An, and Ra. Betelgeuse, the red giant, Rigel, and Bellatrix are some other well-known stars in the Orion constellation. Another famous phenomenon in the Orion constellation is Great White Nebula, in which thousands of stars are being born. Okay, let's jump to the chase here about the extraterrestrials. The word Orion may derive from the ancient Akkadian word Urana, which means the light of heaven. The inherent energy of Orion is associated with polarity conflict. Hence, the strong feelings of connections that many humans display regarding Orion. Physical characteristics of the physical humanoid species found in Orion are, according to this source, which you can find at exopolitics.com, 75% of the inhabitants are human or standard vegan in nature. 14% are non-human, vegan, parenthesis, insect or reptoid-like, often called reptilians or lizzies. 10% are darker-skinned Lyran. 1% is Caucasian Lyran. And then we go on. An important feature of what we might call priests in the Orion system is that they have clear blue eyes. This color is not natural, but obtained through a type of spiritual path. See Orion Priesthood. Orion Nebula lies hundreds of light years beyond the Orion Open Cluster and has been identified as a gateway to an infinite realm beyond the physical universe, or the abode of the angelic forces and the supreme being. Material published on the SERPO site in August 2006 mentions the Project Orion. So there are all sorts of what we can call the beginnings of a typology of extraterrestrial species or types, trying to map the different sorts of extraterrestrials which exist. Some of the extraterrestrials are in a physical form. Others are in a light body form. And some are more accurate than others. And this is the beginning science of exopolitics. If you would like to begin that study, you can go to www.exopoliticsinstitute.org. You can go to the website of our colleague, Dr. Michael Sala, our Exopolitics Radio commentator, who has a number of beginning studies on the typology of extraterrestrials. If you look at the different civilizations around planet Earth, if we look at the Earth, the fact that the Earth is only 4.5 billion years old and that mankind may be, what, 100,000 to a million years old, the civilizations that seem to have played an important part in the history of the Earth seem to include those coming from the Pleiades, from Sirius, from Orion, from Arcturus, from Zeta Reticuli, from Vega, from other stars in Lyra, and from elsewhere in the universe. So we are at a very, very threshold, beginning threshold in the study of exopolitics, or that is relations with other intelligent civilizations. Some of these civilizations are not physical at all, such as the Arcturans. They are in fifth-dimensional light bodies, as far as we know. Some, such as the Draconians, are not mammalians. They are reptilians. So that there's a great deal behind the blanket term that we call extraterrestrials. Having said that, let's listen now to our Exopolitics Radio commentator, Steve Bassett, on exopolitics and the 2008 U.S. presidential election update. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. This is Exopolitics Radio. Please stay tuned. Thank you. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, and today we have our special exopolitics commentator from Washington, D.C., Stephen Bassett, who is the executive director of EXPAC, the Extraterrestrial Phenomenon Political Action Committee, and the only registered lobbyist with the U.S. Congress on behalf of the extraterrestrial research and activist community. His work has been referenced in, among others, the Washington Post, Washington Times, New York Times, Legal Times. I love saying this because these are the major earthly publications: Christian Science Monitor, National Journal, Pravda, London Science Express, The Hill in Washington, D.C., O'Dwyer's Washington Report, and I'm sure many others. Steve has worked with the late Professor John Mack of Harvard University and is the organizer of the X Conference. We'll be having the X Conference 2008 coming up in April, and Steve will be telling us about that shortly, and was a candidate in 2004 for the U.S. Congress in Maryland on an exopolitics platform. He'll be
he'll be sharing us today his update on the very dynamic U.S. presidential race and how the ET UFO issue is figuring in that. Welcome, Steve.
Alfred, it's always good to be with you.
Well, you know, we're sort of in the aftermath of Super Tuesday and right before the Potomac primary. And what are your views now on how the ET UFO issue is faring? I know that you've noted that the mainstream articles on the UFO ET issue have jumped 650%, I think, over prior years.
But well, I track media. I track the media, and I have sources, and I get articles submitted that come through my pipeline, and I log them into my site so people can actually go and look at. I think I'm over 1,800 articles now that they can check going back to 1947. And while it's not a scientific survey, the number of articles that I logged in from my sources in 2006 was about 180. And this year we're on a pace to produce, log in 1,200 mainstream articles on the UFOET issues. That's a 650% increase. That's very notable, no question about it. With respect to the campaign, the status quo is that all candidates running for the president that are substantive at all, they're on the main stage, in other words, certainly the two parties, say absolutely nothing about the UFOET issue, never refer to it, never mention it, and the press never asks them. That's the status quo. And generally that's been the case going back into the distant past. There was a brief interlude with Jimmy Carter, who had a sighting, talked about it, got into his campaign, got brought up, and actually generated a number of things. But that was 1976 and 1977, and that was way too early to impact the truth embargo that we're facing here on the ET issue. So that's the status quo. That status quo has changed a little bit this year. A lot of people have put a lot of effort into trying to get the issue of ET presence and UFO phenomena into the campaign in a proper way. And a lot of groundwork was done, but thanks to Shirley MacLaine, who happened to talk about her good friend Dennis Kucinich's sighting back in 1992 when he was staying at her house, it actually really launched it forward, and Tim Russert opened the door. And that question generated a lot of press, as did the question posed by Chris Matthews to Governor Bill Richardson after that October 30 debate, the Kucinich question. And other questions have sort of popped up. So it's got a toehold into the campaign, but it's nowhere near where it needs to be. But clearly an opportunity is here. So there's a potential, since we still have 9 months to go, that this issue might finally be part of the presidential campaign, which is to say that serious questions will be asked of the candidates who want to rule the country, and they will make some kind of a response to those questions. What that will be is up to them, but whatever they say, they had better be careful, because we've got an enormous amount of material to support the facts of this matter, and the public awareness of the of people and the citizens and the voters is very high. So if they really tap dance around the issue or say stupid things, they're gonna hear about it. That's why they don't want to be asked. They know that it's awkward, and they would rather say nothing rather than have to lie or tap dance. So we're going to put the onus on them hopefully soon to do this.
Now, there are several paradoxes with regard to the ET UFO issue, and I'd like to separate ET and UFO, because more than in prior years, those two issues as regard to extraterrestrial craft and as regard to ARVs, alien reproduction or human craft that are in the form of what we might expect to be ET-like craft,
sure,
seem to be coming to the fore. I'm thinking of the, and no pun intended, Steve, the Stephenville, Texas sightings, mm-hmm, which are remarkable in that they're highly visible. Very large craft, a mile long, a half mile wide, within 60 miles of the Texas White House.
Right.
Highly documented, witnessed on the mainstream media, witnesses to apparent chases by U.S. Air Force. There were at least 20 to 25 U.S. Air Force bases around them, and yet it's anomalous as to whether those are, in fact, extraterrestrial craft or human craft under some space navy concept.
Well, for the purposes of my work and for the exopolitical process, as far as I'm concerned, I don't make the distinction.
Okay.
It's not a relevant distinction, I think, to the disclosure process. Here's why. We can't know. There is simply no way we can know for sure what is an ET craft and what is a reproduced or re-engineered craft piloted by humans. Unless they land, get out, show us their driver's license, we can't know. What is important, though, is this, is that even if they're not ET craft, but they're using anti-gravitic systems or similar type technology, that technology was derived from ET craft. So the presence of the ARVs, as they're sometimes called, is just simply confirmatory of the presence of ETs themselves. And it's the presence of ETs behind some of the UFO sightings that is, of course, the critical and preeminent exopolitical question. Stephensville is notable because it happened right during the middle of the campaign, it happened near the White House, and also because it demonstrated that the bar has been lowered by the media. They don't need quite as much stimulus to really go out and do a lot of stories. And so Stephenville generated a great deal of media, which is accounting for, again, this extreme increase in the number of news stories. O'Hare had a similar impact, the Chicago O'Hare sighting, which is at the beginning of this year. There was also a significant sighting in San Diego that didn't get quite as much attention. But the fact is that Stephensville is a sighting, and there have been millions of sightings. And it's almost like, right? The point is, we know there's ETs here, and we know that some of these UFO sightings are, in fact, ET craft piloted by a remote control, by extraterrestrial entities, not human beings. That's the biggest story in the world. Politically, what are we going to do about it? Now, that's where things get interesting. And here is something that your listeners will be hearing probably for the first time tonight, some things in terms of the coming strategy to look for. PRG is going to continue to really put the pressure on Hillary Clinton and try to make the case to the media that she and her husband are connected to the UFO-ET issue by virtue of the two-year Rockefeller Initiative effort between 93 and 96 that went on in the Clinton White House at the Office of Science and Technology Policy. It wasn't stopped. They met with she and her husband met at various times with Lawrence Rockefeller and so forth. They knew exactly what he was trying to do. It was watched by other people in the White House, including John Podesta, who has actually come out of the closet on this issue. They are connected to this issue. They know about this issue, and they need to be asked about it. And I have plans for a press conference in which we're going to deliver to the press 160 of the best, most pertinent Rockefeller Initiative OSTP FOIA documents and some other things which will hopefully prompt them to go to the senator and say, well, what do you think about that? Did you think it was important? Why did it go on? Why did your husband ask Webster Hubble to look into the issue? Now, as we know, the racism narrowed very rapidly. With the withdrawal of Romney today, you now have essentially two primary candidates, three candidates on the Republican side, and really just two candidates now on the Democratic side, the other one, of course, being Barack Obama. Well, in the fairly near future, I'm also going to hold a press conference, and I'm going to tie Barack Obama to the UFO-ET issue. Now, people are going to think, wait a minute, well, how are you going to do that? Because he never said anything, and he hasn't been in Washington but very short time. He was an Illinois state senator and so forth. What's the connection? Here's the connection. In 1977, Jimmy Carter initiated two studies of the ET issue. He attempted to follow up on his promises during the campaign to look at this, obviously because he felt it was significant. No president is going to do that if he thinks it's utterly ridiculous, not simply to placate people who sent him a bunch of letters. Those studies were initiated, but they were rapidly, essentially either curtailed or summarily stopped by elements within his own administration, CIA, NASA, and the Department of Defense. A report was done regarding one of them, completed by Marcia Smith, called the UFO Enigma. Not a bad report. I mean, it wasn't totally biased, but it was basically token. And then Jimmy Carter shut up on the issue and has remained essentially silent on this issue, except to occasionally respond to a question about his sighting ever since, literally shut down. This is a significant event that happened in 77, 14 years before the end of the Cold War, and too soon for it to have any traction or go anywhere, since the truth embargo was not going to be allowed to end prior to the end of the Cold War. There was simply no consensus within the internal structures of these intelligence and military entities to do this. But At the time that this took place, his national security advisor was a big new Brzezinski, a very significant player on the world stage, still quite hale and hearty, and he obviously was fully aware of the there's no way he was not aware. I mean, it would be utterly stunning if he wasn't. He was the national security advisor. He would have known that these two studies had been initiated by Carter. He would have known that thousands of letters were pouring into the White House and were being dealt with. He would have known that the Project Blue Book records were made available to Danny Sheehan. It's simply inconceivable that with regard to a matter like that, with that degree of sensitivity, that the national security advisor was out of the loop. Now, he's never spoken about it. He never said anything, but a little common sense applies here. Now, why is that significant? That's significant because the current, by a hair, leading candidate to be the Democratic nominee is Barack Obama. And there's a consensus that he may very well be that nominee with a very high probability of becoming President of the United States. Barack Obama has chosen as his chief pre-nomination national security advisor, the big new Brzezinski. And so, as far as I'm concerned, he's now connected through Zbigniew back to the Carter studies. Zbigniew knew about them. He doesn't want to tell him about them. That's his call. But the press need to be asking Mr. Brzezinski, what did he know about that? If it's important enough to Jimmy, it should be important enough for Barack. Is he briefing him on it? What has he told him about it? And so forth. So as you can see, because we have more information, more knowledge, and FOI documents, and we have a building disclosure movement underway, we have the means now to put these people's feet to the fire so they can not be allowed to maintain this ridiculous, absurd, and destructive charade in which they pretend that something which is all over the world and being seen constantly doesn't exist simply because they don't want to be discomfited by a difficult question.
We'll be right back after the break. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, and we are continuing with our interview. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Thank you.
We have the means now to put these people's feet to the fire so they can not be allowed to maintain this ridiculous, absurd, and destructive charade in which they pretend that something which is all over the world and being seen constantly doesn't exist simply because they don't want to be discomfited by a difficult question.
That's a very novel approach, Steve, and I really must congratulate you for making those connections, because that's the first time that I've heard. I had known that Brzezinski and many people from the Trilateral Commission have come in as Barack Obama's foreign policy apparatus.
Mm-hmm.
But I had not made that particular connection. And so I have to congratulate you on reframing the Brzezinski policy, foreign policy support in this context.
Well, there's no question that while there may be others advising him, there's no way that they're senior to Brzezinski.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Now, your listeners, many of your listeners probably already know that this is a non-trivial issue for you, because as you've probably discussed on your show, I know you've discussed many times, one of those studies was initiated by you. You're fully aware of it.
Right.
And it was your study that was to be based at the Stanford Research Institute that was shut down by the Department of Defense summarily, since they just didn't want it to go forward.
Now, I would like to say also at this point that what is very encouraging as well is that of all of the candidates, including Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama has come out explicitly in support of a treaty banning all weapons in space.
Good for him.
And that's the most progressive position, even more progressive than Denis Kucinich, before he dropped out, who paradoxically had not adopted that position explicitly. And that's a position that we know the extraterrestrials take. Well, the advanced ethical extraterrestrials take a position against nuclear weapons and against the permanent war economy in general, a large component of which, the next step of which, is the weaponization of space. That would be a quantum leap in the permanent war economy of Earth.
Well, that's a given. Without getting into what extraterrestrials may think or want or what their motives are, there's no question that space offers an enormous opportunity for the permanent war economy, as you like to say, to spend another couple of trillion, and the people had better be really circumspect about that.
Now, putting
aside for a minute the fact that these candidates must speak to these issues and other issues and stop trying to skate into the White House untouched, right? Meaning ask me the standard stuff about the war or maybe Social Security or whatever. But don't really get into the don't ask me about overpopulation issues and how we would address that either directly or don't ask us about some of the key studies that have been done by the CIA and the Department of Defense about wars of thirst and wars over food that are coming. Don't ask me this tough stuff. Just ask me the kind of standard crap and I'll answer them. No, that's got to stop. Now, aside from that, though, it is my belief, and I've stated this several times, that, and this is kind of an interpolation of a lot of things that I have witnessed over the last few years, I believe the Democrats have made a commitment internally. And I'm not saying that they all got together and had a vote. I'm saying that there are certain key people within the Democratic Party have made a decision that they are going to champion and effectuate disclosure in the beginning of this term. Now, it's notable that Hillary Clinton, of course, has as her chief surrogate campaigner, her husband is obviously not retiring to an old age home. He's going to be right there. So if she is president, well, the connection right back to the Rockefeller Initiative certainly means that they're not in the dark about such a maneuver should it be broached to them.
Now, was that a Freudian slip?
In the dark?
No. When you said, if he is president.
Did I say if he? I meant to say if she. It's almost Freudian. But now with Obama, on the other hand, it's interesting to note that while Obama has no obviously high-level connection to this issue, I would doubt seriously, he has as his chief advisor a man who clearly is a man who clearly knows about the ET presence. He has way too much gravitas and way too many connections. There is no way that he is not aware of the ET presence, and because he has the ability to get information from inside people off record in the military and intelligence community. He's just a heavy, heavy hitter. He's a Kissinger. And he was, of course, there when the whole Carter flap developed prematurely and watched that go on. So he would be a perfectly suitable person to bring Obama up to speed if he becomes president and the Democrats make this maneuver, which, as I've pointed out many times and will continue to point out ad nauseum, they need to make the maneuver very early in 2009. They can't wait a year or 2 years. If they do that, then the truth embargo becomes their truth embargo, and they have the same problem. Why didn't you tell us right away? You knew this. Why didn't you tell us? And then other things could happen. France could pop the issue open, or China, and thus completely getting ahead of the United States, trumping our ace, as it were. So they need to move quickly. So I believe even if the candidates don't speak to the issue during the campaign, and I'm going to do my damnedest to get them to, I think the iron's in the fire here. Now, something could get blown up, some city could get nuked, a plague, who knows? I mean, whatever kinds of bad behavior lie in our near future, that could disrupt that timetable, which is one of the reasons why we have to keep the pressure on. We can't assume anything. The world is too problematic and there's too many draconian and dramatic scenarios operating simultaneously. You just can't predict anything. We need people to step forward if they want the truth of this matter. And I can't imagine given all that we face in this world, that any citizen that has reasonable intelligence and education doesn't think that knowing the truth about this ET reality and also perhaps getting access to the technology we have been working on related to ET craft that could really help us deal with these problems that are being shoved under our nose every day, that any reasonable person is not going to go, yeah, we want to know that. We want to know it right now. But they have to say so. They have to speak up.
Yeah. Well, you know, Steve, just about 6 weeks ago, in mid-December, I was in Japan for a week at the invitation of a think tank talking mm-hmm. about extraterrestrials and Earth changes. And the week that I was there, the government of Japan erupted into spontaneous public discussion that was carried all around the world
right.
on extraterrestrial policy of a
and
very
generated a number of articles.
Nature, yeah.
Mm-hmm. International articles.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm wondering, I mean, Japan is a nation of 60 million people that has the same gross domestic product as the U.S. What is the difference between the U.S. and Japan, whereby the Japanese government officials, the Minister of Defense, can get up in Parliament and have this open, civilized discussion on a rational basis, that in the U.S. we have such a lockdown system that we have incursions over the southern border by, let's call them, quote, illegal aliens of a different sort.
Highly high-tech versions
yeah.
of that.
Yeah, and in the middle of a presidential campaign, and it's the elephant in the living room that nobody can talk about. What?
Oh, it always has been. I mean,
yeah.
the elephant's been in the living room so long that
you know?
it's quite at home. Well, the difference is simple. The truth embargo was led by the U.S. The U.S. essentially made the decision to do this, and the rest of the world followed. They owed us because of the world, you know, World War II, and you know, the fact that we were the chief bulwark in the Cold War. Obviously, we spent the most money. We spent almost, I think, $13 trillion. So we kind of led the show, and maintaining the truth embargo required that the U.S. in particular had to be really blanketed with propaganda. In other words, the embargo was very strongly played out here. It was critical that the press and the media and the institutions and the colleges and the intellectual and everybody else were fed a lot of baloney, and the whole thing was heavily ghettoized, and the ridicule factor was raised as high as they could get it. And so they just put more emphasis on the truth embargo here than in Japan. So this whole thing is simply a mess, and there's only one way out of it. We got to start telling the truth. We need to start telling the truth fast and hard about everything possible within reason, right? And there's no better place to start than finally, 60 years in, acknowledging what millions and tens of millions of people have figured out, that there's an extraterrestrial presence here, flying around, doing their thing. Some of those things are maybe not so nice. But whatever's going on, until we acknowledge it as a society, we are basically all walking around with paper bags over our heads, and this is not a good way to operate.
Now, getting back to the 2008 campaign, if we go over to the Republican side, the front runner at this point, John McCain, is on record. In fact, there's a video, there's a YouTube video sequence where he's explicitly asked in the context of the campaign about ETs and UFOs. You know, the Phoenix Lights.
This wasn't this campaign. This was 2004, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he says, yes, I take the UFO issue very, very seriously. He's from Phoenix. He represents the state of the Phoenix Lights, the anchor station KPHX of Exopolitics Radio. Why not, as a strategy, since John McCain is on the record that he is publicly on the record that he takes it very seriously. The former governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, is on the record publicly as saying that John McCain takes this very seriously. He's a friend of John McCain. Go to Fife Symington, have him go to John McCain, and have McCain make a public statement, and then with that public statement challenge Obama and Clinton.
Well, that's That's a good strategy.
Yeah.
It's not one, I mean, the ones I were talking about before, I can execute those with respect to Obama and Clinton, but I have no in with Fye-Symington, and who knows if Fye-Symington would approach McCain. I will say this.
Yeah.
That I'm aware of this video, and I'm going to get it, and I'm going to work with it a little bit. And it could be used as a basis to toss it out and try to get some candidates to ask him about it. Unfortunately, with McCain, there's a number of videos of him talking about a number of things over the years, and he's completely reversed his position on them. My guess is that John will just completely reverse his position on that as well.
Uh-huh.
That said, right, he is a war hero with high regard within military.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that particularly given the Phoenix Lights, was a pretty significant event. It's been around for 10 years.
Yeah.
That if John McCain had, you know, wanted to make a few discreet inquiries, he could have done that and probably would have gotten some off-record decent responses, which is to say that if John were to had made a few queries to the right people, even retired people, the ET presence could have been easily confirmed to him. He may know about it because he's someone that could get that info. But he's certainly not in any way volunteered. He answered a question about it, said something reasonable, but has done nothing since. Now, that's notable. And I'm not above putting pressure on him, but I'm kind of trying to, I have limited resources. I'm focusing on Barack and Hillary because I feel they have about a 90% chance of being president, one of them. I don't think McCain has any chance of being president. And so the fact that both Barack and Hillary clearly feel that if they get the nomination, they're going to be president, that makes them and their camps hypersensitive to anything that could cause them a problem. And clearly, the UFO issue could cause them a problem. John has got a different problem. His problem is how to conduct a campaign and lose gracefully, because there is no way that the Republicans can win this election. I can't even imagine it. It's beyond my. It's just simply not possible. I would say the chances are less than 5%. Now, that's not something that people talk about, because if you're in the political arena, because if you're in the campaign, because that turns voters off. So if you go out there and say, you know, you're going to win it, and it's not a chance, then people that might have voted for you don't vote, and vice versa. So everybody talks like it's going to be close. Well, I'm a registered independent, and I don't care about that. And I'll just tell you flat out, any reasonable assessment of this thing, there is no chance Republicans win this election. So John is in an interesting position. I don't know how he would handle a question. He hasn't been asked in the debates, and I would like to see that happen. And I will say this, if we can generate a question to Obama and Hillary, a serious question in some of the other debates, it may very well trigger a question to him. And we could have kind of a snowball going downhill here. But the point is that we are able, because we can track things, because we have these videos, we can go find them. Once they get taken, they're put on YouTube, they're out there. We're able to keep together a sense of what these people have said and done on this issue, which really wasn't possible 20 years ago. I mean, you just couldn't. Now we really, and not only that, but if they do say something, we can then pull those videos out, pull the documents out, and put them to the test. In other words, so it's really a new time. It's just nothing like it was 25 years ago or 20 years, and 15 years ago. Dodging this issue, whether you're a journalist or whether you're a politician, is getting very, very difficult. And so there's a moment of truth coming here pretty soon where you're going to see a couple more questions even stronger and more appropriate than the Kucinich question asked by Tim Russert. And then they're going to have a really tough decision to make, because if they decide to completely confabulate a response or make a ridiculous response, we can be on them within 12 hours, and their problems will multiply. Why? Because there is an extraterrestrial presence. If there was no extraterrestrial presence, they don't have a problem. But there is, and most of them, believe it or not, know it, and that's why they have a problem. And there's one simple solution to their problem. Start telling the truth. We would really appreciate it if they do that.
Steve, thank you so much. We've come to the end of this segment, but we look forward to your continuing comments here on Exopolitics Radio and to your coming back as this very exciting and potentially breakthrough campaign moves forward.
And we will be getting into this at the X Conference in April, April 18th.
Oh, great.
X-conference.com is where you can register.
Excellent.
We've got a tremendous lineup of speakers, and it'll be held in near Washington, D.C., April 18th through 20th, Gaithersburg Hilton. So I hope some of your listeners will come join us.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Good enough. We've been with Steve Bassett, our exopolitics commentator in Washington, D.C. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Well, listening to the interview that we just heard with Steve Bassett, I mean, you know, put up all those beings that have worked so hard their lives, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, all of the politicians, all of us 7 billion here on Earth, and just begin to think of the Pleiades, Sirius, Orion, Arcturus, Zeta Reticuli, Vega, Lyra, the 200 billion stars in the galaxy. I mean, let's just have a little distance and a bit of humility, folks. That's what politics should really be, a bit more humility. My own prediction, well, whoever is president, and it well may be Mr. Barack Obama, I've heard that the word on the street is that he's been identified by secret U.S. time travel technology and was identified nearly 40 to 50 years ago by CIA time travel technology as a future president of the United States. But that I believe that in 2009 and years forward, the profound damage done to the United States, to its social, political, and economic system, and to that of the world by those cosmic retards, Richard B. Cheney and George W. Bush, is so profound that it will take decades to undo it. Exopolitics Radio is produced by Phoenix Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX, Progressive Talk Phoenix, Executive Producer Richard Romero Sr., Director R.V. Romero, Producer and Editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and ethical, extraterrestrial, abundant day, week, and life. Thank you.